At the premiere of Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in Paris in May of 1913, the great French composer Maurice Ravel greeted his Russian-born colleague's work with shouts of genius, genius. But the plaudits were mixed with catcalls and boos from the audience. Fistfights broke out. American composer George Antheil received the same treatment at the 1926 premiere of his Ballet Mécanique for multiple pianos, airplane propellers, percussion, and a siren. Like Stravinsky's Sacco du Printemps 13 years earlier, the Parisian audience again came to blows as Antheil fans and detractors squared off. Antheil has caught Paris by the ear, wrote composer Aaron Copland. He's outsacked the sack. Pianist Guy Livingston is director of Les Amis de Georges Antheil, the Friends of George Antheil, and he's just released The Lost Sonatas on Wurgo Records. He joins us from the studios of the BBC Paris. Hello, Guy, or should I say bonjour?
Bonjour. It's nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you, too. You are not only a scholar of George Antheil, you are a performer. I know this is going to be hard because the man has many facets, but can you give us just a brief biographical sketch of this man, who he was, and then how did he end up in Paris creating this outrageous music?
Well, it's kind of extraordinary. It's sort of a fluke. He was born in, of all places, Trenton, New Jersey, which at the time was still an industrial thriving town, but it was pretty much the middle of nowhere musically. And so he had basically a self-taught childhood. He more or less learned to play the piano and the violin on his own. And then all of a sudden, around 18 or 20, he became serious, got a teacher in Philly, and found a manager. And the manager sent him off to Europe. And he was an instant success, sort of an amazing, amazing story, because he'd never actually performed a solo recital in his life, and he'd never had a piece published. It was entirely out of nowhere. The guy was just so creative. And his music shocked people. It was wild, it was loud, it was mechanical, it was aggressive. No one had heard anything like it at all. Even the dress rehearsal for Ballet Mécanique, there's James Joyce in the front row. You know, it's supposed to be written for 16-player pianos simultaneously, so it's loud and it's crazy, and you have these arpeggi going up and down the piano. It's going brrrlum, brrrlum, and then the sirens come in going and it's all, you know, the bells are ringing, and it's just this incredibly crazy loud sound. And there's James Joyce in the front row. And Joyce was someone whose favorite kind of music, he listened to Purcell, he listened to what we call now early music. And Joyce is sitting in the front row during this rehearsal. It's so loud, and he's got this big grin on his face, and his eyes are closed, and he's leaning back in his chair. And when it's over, he comes up to George and he says, "You know, Georgie, I love it. It sounds just like Mozart."
Okay.
Yep. Not quite what you'd expect.
No. He composed the way a painter composes. I mean, his influences were the great visual artists as well. Picasso and his cubism and futurism. Was Antheil trying to do that same thing in his music?
That's exactly what he's trying to do. His music takes blocks of sound and these ostinato patterns, and he rolls them over and over again, and then he suddenly changes them. It's cinematic, it's visual. Definitely, this is a composer whose main ideas came from the visual arts and all that was happening then.
Is it true he used to bring a gun to concerts?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He fired a gun on stage. Well, actually, I should take a step back here. We don't know if he really had a loaded gun with him. He had a gun, and he claimed to have fired it once in a concert in Budapest. I think that's probably apocryphal. I doubt if it was ever loaded. But he liked to present himself as kind of a gangster pianist. But he liked that, to give that edge to his persona, you might say.
How did you become infatuated and then obviously smitten with Antheil's music?
Smitten is the word, yeah. I began studying his stuff when I first heard the Ballet Mécanique, which is really his greatest work. I tried to find out more about him. I read the biography, which is funny. It's called Bad Boy of Music. and it's almost a novel. It's great stories and great tales of the 1920s. And then I just wanted to find out more music, and I began researching at first in the libraries here in Europe and then at the New York Public Library. And there I found a whole sort of treasure trove of unpublished scores.
On the CD, we have his lost piano sonatas that you've recorded. How did you find them?
I found them because I was in touch with Charles Amerikanian, who's a composer and musicologist and organist and director out in California. And he found them because he met Beschke Antal, George's widow, in the early 70s, and he discovered that she had boxes and boxes of material that he'd never published, he'd never done anything with. He just performed them in Paris, and then he just put them in a box or in a trunk. And years later, decades later, Amerikanian found those, and he began to work on publishing and then get them, you know, available to the public. But people really weren't interested. It wasn't yet the time. And then I happened on them, again, in the late 90s when they came to the New York Public Library, which had purchased them. And at that point, I think the public was ready. People's taste in music had evolved, and Antal started to seem like a good idea. And so when I played this stuff, I got very good reactions. And I just began playing more and more and doing more research.
When George Antal died in 1959, only two of his 13 sonatas were in printed circulation.
That's right, yeah.
You have the third, fourth, and fifth sonatas on the CD, a couple of other sonatas with very evocative titles. First of all, one that is one of the older ones written in the 20s, Sonate Sauvage.
Yes. He was inspired in this definitely by hearing African percussion instruments, no question about that. And it's also interesting because he was inspired by Brancusi. Brancusi being a friend of his, and Brancusi was, of course, working with all sorts of visual ideas. And if you think of something like the Golden Bird or other sculptures that he was making that come from African fetish sculpture and so on, Antal was trying to do that same thing.
The Brancusi sculptures are, they're very smooth and round, and, you know, he does a woman's head that literally looks like a golden egg. How did that work into this music?
It's so abstract, and I think Antal loved the idea that that Brancusi was working on sculptures that were both primitive and high-tech at the same time. I mean, he used a lot of materials and so on, metals that were very highly polished and so on, so they looked extremely modern. And yet, at the same time, he was being influenced by African sculptures that were centuries old and ideas that were really very traditional. Antal wanted to do that same thing, mix those high-tech, the machines, against the rhythmic patterns that were just fundamental, basic to humans.
What's it like to perform his music? You sound like you have to be Mr. Machine.
No, I think that's the paradox, is that if you just play it mechanically, it's going to sound, it won't have any soul to it. It needs that extra something, and Antal had that. He was really, aside from being a master pianist himself with a big, serious technique, he had a lot of charisma on stage and a lot of romanticism to his personality. And I think he put that in the music, even though it's not so much written in. If you play it without, then it does become soulless. It needs that extra sort of gutsy kind of undercurrent. But everything that you read about Antal, you know, his letters and so on, and also reports from people who watched him on stage say that he was, in fact, sort of the ultimate romantic.
Woman Sonata receives a world premiere recording. What's the title mean?
It was dedicated to his wife, Beschke. They weren't married yet, but they were about to be married. He was actually trying to win her over because at that point she was still uncertain about the relationship. The movements were initially entitled Woman, Tree, Flower. Later he changed them to Languor, Prestissimo, Moderato. I think he thought it was too personal. But it's an intriguing work because you have to wonder about Beschke's personality because it's quite aggressive in certain moments, and then other moments, especially the first one, are very languorous and absolutely beautiful.
You're director of Les Amis de Georges Antheil in Paris. How many friends does Georges Antheil have there in Paris?
He has a lot of friends. We have about 100 members. For me, it's a compelling project. I like his music so much. It gives me a chance to play around with a lot of the issues from the 1920s and this kind of dichotomy between the cubist sort of aesthetic, the mechanical aesthetic, and then that romanticism that still hadn't disappeared. It was just sort of an undercurrent.
Yeah, but you get to go on stage and sit at the piano and then be this crazy guy. And
yeah, I get to go out in a tux and carry a gun. You don't get to do that with Mozart every day.
Pianist and ami de Georges Antheil, Guy Livingston. His CD, Georges Antheil, The Lost Sonatas, is on Wurgo Records. And Guy joined us from the studios of the BBC in Paris. Guy, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Leanne.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.